Smart talk for curious people just like you. Just like you. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
And I'm glad about it. In this half hour, as promised, UCLA's Dr. Marcus Anthony Hunter joins us live in studio to talk about this letter that I referenced earlier that's been signed by over 400-plus lawmakers, activists, actors, and more, calling on President Joe Biden to support a list of congressional bills on racial equity and reparative justice through executive orders and executive actions. We know that the president always has the power of the pen. And full transparency here, yours truly is one of the 400-plus people who agreed to affix their signature to the letter. No apologies for that. And so we spent a few moments now talking about this letter, what's in the letter, why the letter was written, why we signed the letter, and most importantly, what we hope to achieve by releasing the letter to the president publicly. And to do all that, I welcome UCLA's Dr. Marcus Anthony Hunter. Doc, how are you today, sir?
I'm blessed and highly favored. Thank you so much. And just shout out to you for adding your name to the list of people. I want to thank Reverend Al Sharpton, Tamika Mallory, Darnell Moore, Law Roach, Dr. David Johns, Prophet from BMAC, and over 400 other people.
I saw Ben,
Ben Crump, our brother Ben Crump.
A bunch of members of Congress.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Derek Johnson, president of NAACP. Yep. Yes, and all of the regular, smegula, degular folks who put their name on the list as well, because equity is an issue that impacts everyone's life. And overall, one of the big key issues has been, why is it that the most powerful black woman in all of Congress, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, has been unable to secure a meeting with him? Unable to secure a meeting even when you have Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, Representative Cori Bush, Representative Jamal Bowman, Senator Cory Booker, Representative Jamie Raskin. I mean, it is very difficult to get members to all unify on any piece of legislation, let alone a series of pieces that have been introduced. And so the goal was really to turn on all the lights, make sure that he's aware that we're still holding you accountable for how, from my vantage point, you got into office.
So what did, in essence, the letter say, and what are the demands made in the letter?
Yeah, the letter that we put out on April 4th, which for folks who don't know, was selected intentionally because it is the anniversary of the assassination of the king, who had transitioned toward a fully robust understanding of reparative justice. And so it's no accident to think about how difficult it was then. It was his life. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that his life is not only remembered for the end, but also for where he was taking us. And part of what the letter says is that we want to uplift the letters that the president received on President's Day from the members of Congress already mentioned, and also from over 180 organizations. And we are wanting for you to take action. And part of what happens is the original letter started right before the State of the Union. And what's important for people to know is that the State of the Union has been shown statistically to not influence political outcomes. So that says, why are you not at least mentioning reparations, equity? Breonna Taylor, why are we not hearing her name in the State of the Union? So when we hear, oh, it's a political season, we know statistically that what you say at the State of the Union doesn't change your chances. All it does is help to keep the media accountable for following stories about what we are up to. And I think until he actually gives his voice to hearing things, like I know that my colleague Gavin Newsom is leading the way in California on reparations processes. We are closely monitoring and paying attention to that. Mm-hmm. So when we say executive orders, that's about the pen. But when we say executive actions, that's about the bully pulpit. Mm-hmm. Can you at least acknowledge that your Democrat colleagues are paving a way in many of the nation's largest states?
And why do you think the president is lagging in this particular area? And let me just tee this up if I can, and you know where I'm going already. he gave us Juneteenth and didn't nobody even ask for it.
Right.
I ain't mad at him about it.
Yeah, right.
That came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. He has been very, very good about black symbolism. Mm-hmm. I want to push him on the substance,
yes,
as do you, to be a bit more progressive. Mm-hmm. But you can't fade him on the symbolism. Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris is VP. Mm-hmm. Ketanji Brown Jackson is on the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. I think she's wrong about a lot of things. Not Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, where I'm about to go. I think Linda Thomas Greenfield is wrong about a number of things she's advancing at the UN. But there's a black woman who represents us in the UN body. I could do this all day long. Mm-hmm. He has been better than Barack Obama at appointing black people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you care about black faces in high places,
right.
And so I think sometimes there's, you know, we make too much of that.
Right.
But at the end of the day, he has not been shy about putting black folk in proper positions.
Mm-hmm.
He has not been shy about acknowledging black folk in his speeches. He's not been shy about saying, I wouldn't be president if it weren't for y'all, Negro. Well, he don't say Negro, but if it weren't for y'all, I wouldn't be president. He is not shy about saying that. So you see where I'm going here. He has not been shy about the black thing.
Right.
But in this regard, he won't say the things that you believe and others believe who signed that letter that he ought to be saying, which doesn't even commit him to anything.
Right.
But using that bully pulpit and putting that words matter, language matters. Mm-hmm. So given how black, putting that in air quotes, how black he has been in other spaces, why is he so shy about inhabiting this particular space? Does that make sense?
Yes, it totally does.
I just wanted to frame it properly.
As you did, you know. One thing that I think is important about the black face of high places, and I know my colleague Ruha Benjamin at Princeton has been circulating because she gave a speech before Spelman about that and the issues around that, is that sometimes institutions, which in the words of the sociologist Chris Brown, ain't loyal, ways in which they become disloyal is by silencing you with black representation so that you seem ungrateful. And one thing that we know that is important as black people in our culture is the culture of gratitude. So always remember that we are further ahead than where we started. And if you start to push too hard, people think you're just complaining and you're ungrateful. So that creates a inability to push somebody because now they just see you as complaining. And what's unfortunate is that we know, if not for the life and loss of life of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, you would not be president. Why have we not heard her name? Why have you not brought his grieving daughter back to your office to say, I know I promised you I would get this done. We're still working on it. Why is that not happening? And why, when you feel you're being called out about it, is the refrain about shutting us down by silencing us with the symbolism and a representation? To say, like, look at what I'm doing. I saw a recent flyer about the Biden-Harris administration has worked with the black community and achieved these things. They're listed not so much as a accomplishments, but whoever is advising him, I don't think that they're aware of how it has a chilling factor to it. Are we not allowed to ask you for things? Because when you close the black white wealth gap, that's just the job of the president. Let me just be clear about that. That's a duty every president has. Whether or not the person does it is not some special favor to us.
None has fulfilled it yet.
Yes, exactly.
But it is their duty, though.
Yes. So what I'm seeing, canceling student debt and all of these other things, that would be the job of any president who was elected. Now, let's get back to how you got in office. And how you got in office is on a racial equity. And what we've been hearing a response, and you even see it in ABC coverage, shout out to Beatrice Peterson, who bravely covers this story over at ABC. They tell her on day one, you know, the president signed the first ever historic racial equity, you know, executive order. And every time I hear that, we are now 3 years later. Did you just do that so we couldn't ask for anything else? Are you just doing that to silence us? And so there's a fine line between supporting and silencing. And without the words being spoken, we are unsure how to interpret what all of these achievements are supposed to mean. Is that just get in line? Because I've been telling people, I hope everyone has seen a Shirley film. Shout out to the Queen, Regina King. But there's a part where she's before the Democratic convention at a small meeting of the black folks, and she says, hold on to your vote. Okay, so even if you think you're going to give it to the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, whomever, hold on to it. They shouldn't really feel comfortable until they see the results. And I think that's another part of how we can help people understand how to appreciate and respect us, is to hold on to our vote.
It's why I always love talking to Dr. Marcus Anthony Hunter. He gives us a new way to see things. And I bet you probably never thought about black success as a silencing mechanism. But think about that. And that's why I'm always, I've said it a thousand times, I'm always ambivalent about these black first. And I've been one of those black first in a lot of spaces in the media. But I'm always ambivalent about it because I see the point that you're making so clearly, that sometimes black success can be used as a silencing mechanism. They put a few Negroes in a few positions and they say, shut up, don't ask me for nothing else. And you're supposed to be happy with that.
Yes.
That's why he's on this program. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Interrogating and unpacking.
That's what we do around here.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Let's get back to more of Tavis Smiley right now.
More of Dr. Marcus Anthony Hunter right now on Tavis Smiley. He's dropping bars up in here and getting us to think about black success as a way to silence black people from making future demands and additional demands. So specifically, the letter says to the president, and I'm, I want to frame it properly. Mm-hmm. I'll let you frame it properly. Mm-hmm. But let me just ask it this way. If the president doesn't respond mm-hmm. to the demand in the letter, then what?
Then we're just going to keep applying pressure. Mm-hmm. And we have what we're calling the Equity Weekend coming up. It's a joint collaboration with the National Black Justice Coalition and the Black Music Action Coalition and a host of other organizations that signed the February 19th letter, mm-hmm. where we're going to do Out on the Hill advocacy with young people going up to Congress and promoting these bills and seeing where members stand. On that Wednesday, that Thursday, we're doing a Know Your Rights and Culture exposition to register people to vote and plus over at Blackburn. Shout out to Howard University, HU. Then on Friday, we're having a ball called the Equity Ball to celebrate and honor the Black, I call alphabet community, LGBTQIA plus SGL, as the original influencers, and to send up Byard Rustin, the organizer behind the original March on Washington. And then we're going to be on Black Lives Matter Plaza on a Saturday, just steps away from the White House, on a Live Nation produced stage where we're going to have speakers and entertainers, you know, basically, you know, pumping that drum hard. Because I think part of what happens is if we're not outside the doorstep, maybe you don't believe us, mm-hmm. you know. And so the organizer in me goes, okay, so we just gonna get closer and closer to that doorstep so that you understand that this is important. And also, what does it mean to simply ignore Black leaders? How is that acceptable? You cannot be telling me that you're doing all of these great things for Black people, but then they're elected officials, you won't even meet with them.
Dr. King famously said, as you know, you're a historian here, famously said in one of his speeches, actually more than one speech, now is the time. Mm-hmm. Now is the time. Now is the time. He used that refrain brilliantly. Mm-hmm. When we come forward, I want to flip the frame on that and ask you how you respond to people who say now is not the time. Mm. Now is not the time to be raised in this kind of Hades with the president facing. I hear the I hear the sarcasm. I hear it already just on the he ain't said nothing yet, but the sound effects make it clear he ain't buying this argument. But there are people who argue that now with all due respect, Dr. King, is not the time to be pressing the president, backing him into a corner, putting him in a box, sending him letters signed by 400 Negroes saying do this, that, and the other. Now is not the time. Donald Trump, on trial, though he may be today, opening statements today. He's an existential threat to this democracy, and now is not the time to be messing with Uncle Joe. We'll talk about that part when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
For all the freedom-loving folk, this is Tavis Smiley.
I feel like freedom.
He's rooting for everybody Black.
Everybody Black. Black.
More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now. Right now.
Dr. Marcus Anthony Hunter is at UCLA, but he went to Columbia. He taught at Yale. And I said earlier this program, sharing some breaking news, that they're arresting dozens of students as we speak on the campus of Yale. Columbia is now in remote classes. Harvard announced they're closing Harvard Yard. All over these protests being led by students about what's happening in Gaza. But again, since he has a Yale-Columbia connection, maybe 45 seconds on that at the very end of this conversation where we have like 4 minutes left. But your first response to the issue I raised a moment ago that people, some people are saying, Black people are saying, with all respect, Marcus Anthony Hunter, we believe in your agenda, but now, Negro, is not the time. Sit your Black behind down and just hold your tongue until once we get past November and we've done away with the existential threat to this democracy, and then you can have your say.
Also known as eat the cake anime, eat the cake.
Exactly.
And any person who's ever watched that, you go, stop eating that cake. Punch him in his mouth. Because there's never a good time to request and require freedom. It's never a good time to ask for peace or love in the world. This is what we're seeing on college campuses. The request is simple. Love and peace are the most powerful forms of power known to man. Why are we not living in them? And I would say, when I hear that not now is not the time, many of us, and when I go into spaces, I ask people by show of hands, how many people have lost someone to COVID or lost someone to death in recent years, and hands go up. And what I often say is, in a world where we're looking for a reason to understand our purpose in life, we actually were chosen. We were all chosen to survive the unsurvivable. So if we have been chosen and selected to survive the unsurvivable, how can it not be the time? How can it not be us? And I think it's important for people to understand, when they start telling people to shut down their voice or shut down and wait, we don't know how much time we have left. We don't know how long, how much longer longer will be here. There are activists who are so tired and exhausted, and to tell them to wait longer, that might mean that they die. And then just to put it simply,
sick and tired of being sick.
Exactly.
Said Fannie Lou Hamer. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
83 million minutes since 1865. Now's not the time. 83 million minutes. So are we supposed to be at 95 million minutes? That equals 5 trillion seconds. Are we supposed to be at 6 trillion seconds? So I want to also make sure that when people are pushing back, that they are respectful of the patience we have shown. We have shown it.
I'm looking at some of the messages coming in about you. Somebody just said, I love him.
I
love him. Somebody else said, so nice of Dr. Hunter to wear the KBLA colors today.
Hey, you already know.
We heard across the country about our colors at our station here in L.A. Are a certain thing, and Marcus is donning that certain thing right about now.
Yes.
And somebody else said, I had to stop working and start taking notes. Had to stop working and start taking notes. Marcus is otherworldly. And imagine him on campus teaching young black people. Mm. The ancestors are rejoicing.
Mm.
So the people love you. There ain't nothing you can do about it.
Thank you.
And I love you too. And I love your insights. And we will have you back soon.
Absolutely.
We're trying to figure out a way to get Marcus Anthony Hunter. We have a number of regular contributors, as you know, including Connie Rice and others. And I'm trying to figure out a way with his busy schedule to get him in the cycle of being one of our regular contributors, because he always makes me think, as I say all the time, when he's here, I always leave this studio smarter than when I came in. His name is Dr. Marcus Anthony Hunter at UCLA. That letter it's all over the internet now.
Yes.
The ABC story.
Yes.
But if you just Google letter to President Biden, signed by 400 black people, you'll find the letter.
That's
just
right.
Google that. Letter to Biden, signed by 400 Negroes. It will come up, and you can read what's in that letter that I was happy to affix my signature to, along with my other black fellow citizens.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Hunter, good to see you, my friend.
Absolutely.
All the best to you. More of Tavis Smiley, our final hour, featuring Terrence Blanchard. Speaking of black genius, we go from black genius to black genius. Terrence Blanchard when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.